Hello, welcome to Wit Beyond Measure. My name's Katrina Mayer.
And I'm Al Kammerer. And today we are talking about Mansfield Park, chapters 39 through 43. So, you know how Austin always tends to have, like, a section in her book where a lot of information is being told by letters?
Yes.
That's this section.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we read the one letter, but, like, we get, like, told about other letters, you know? Mm-hmm. And then our next chapter, which we didn't read for this week, that'll be the start for next week, starts with a letter. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, apparently epistolary novels were really popular back in the day, so that's probably where she got this inspiration.
Yeah.
But we've seen it in Pride and Prejudice and Emma, at the very least. I don't remember if there was a good section in Northanger Abbey.
Yeah, because the frenemy sends her letters, remember?
Oh, yeah. I forget. Isabella Thorpe sends her letters. That's how she finds out all of the information.
Yeah.
Yep, nope, yeah.
And her brother. Her brother, too, sends her letters. And the letters, they're contradictory, kind of. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in Emma, it's the letters about Frank Churchill and everything like that. And it's right before the end of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, this is it for Mansfield Park.
Yeah, we only have one section after this one. And these last two sections are 5-chapter sections, so.
Yeah. Okay, well, I have the super duper quick recap. Mm-hmm. So I will go do that. I will do that.
Yeah.
Okay. So Fanny is unhappy in Portsmouth. Like, she's just not having it. Her family is wild. They're uncouth. They're, like, completely different than what she's used to at Mansfield Park. It is giving her massive anxiety, or I'm just reading into it. Either way, she is not a happy camper. So her uncle's, like, medicine is working. Her parents don't seem to give a fuck that she's there. Like, they don't care. And really, the only family members that seem to actually want Fanny there are Sam, her brother, who Fanny helps get ready to ship off. And then later on, Susan, who starts to kind of get an interest in reading and learning things. But that's actually towards the ends of these chapters that Susan and Fanny kind of start to build a relationship. Well, then Fanny gets a visitor. And it's not the visitor I thought she was going to get, but I knew she was going to get one. Mm-hmm. It is Henry Crawford.
Mm-hmm.
He comes to visit, and Fanny is immediately ashamed of her family, to the point where when they run into her father, like, she's just not having it. But surprisingly, Henry is really super nice about it. Like, he's, you know, really, you know, he seems genuine in wanting to meet and spend some time with her family, especially her siblings. All of the, like, familial stress and probably the Henry Crawford stress and just being away from Mansfield Park has made Fanny look really sickly. According to Mary Crawford, it's the sea air. But Henry, insists that Fanny doesn't stay the whole 2 months. Instead, that she allows him and Mary Crawford to come and take her back to Mansfield Park.
Mm-hmm.
Because he can't just take her back right now. He would have to go get his sister and then come back and then go. Because that's how these things work back then. Mary sends 2 letters to Fanny describing various things, including Mariah and Julia and mm-hmm. her interactions with them, because they come and call on her. Also, Mrs. Rushworth has her first ball. The only thing that isn't in the letters is whether or not Mary and Edmund are engaged, which it's looking like that's not going to happen. And that's the end.
Yeah, that's it. That's what happens in this section. It's actually kind of a light section.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
It's really Fanny complaining about her family.
it kind of is. But then it's also like a little bit like, oh, Henry Crawford. Oh, wait, Henry Crawford's not that bad anymore? No, I still don't like him. Wait, Susan is, like, getting really smart, and how great would it be if I could bring her to the country? But I can't, I don't have a house. But Henry Crawford, I don't know, it's just, like, really weird.
And it's not even just that, it's Henry Crawford has a house out in the country, because we actually get to learn a little bit about his estate, because apparently he has a fucking estate.
Yeah, he got his estate out in the country, and he's, like, doing things, and, like, he's doing it for Fanny, but, mm-hmm. yeah, she's looking a lot more favorably on Henry Crawford in these chapters, which is exactly what her uncle had intended to happen.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I started to look a little bit more, like, kindly on Henry Crawford in these chapters, too. But what is he doing in London that isn't being said?
We don't know yet.
Yeah, I know. Because, I don't remember if it was implied that he might, or if he did attend the ball, or Mrs. Rushworth's ball.
I don't believe he did. What is implied, and this is at the end of this section, is mm-hmm. that Mary Crawford is going to set up a meeting, or, like, they're going to go call on Mrs. Rushworth, mm-hmm. and Henry is supposed to go. That hasn't happened yet. Fanny is just hearing about it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I imagine, and I don't remember, and I don't quote me on this, but I imagine that the letter that we start with in our next section might address what happens there, maybe. So, yeah.
Yeah.
We will have to see.
Because that's the part where I'm like, what happens when Henry starts seeing Mariah and Julia again?
I don't know. So. We shall find out. But let's not get too far gone there yet. Let's talk about poor Fanny and these mm-hmm. first two chapters of this section, which are surrounding first, like, the house where she's staying in, her family's house, and then that addresses, like, her family members specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the first chapter of this section, which is chapter 39.
Could Sir Thomas have seen his niece's feelings when she wrote her first letter to her aunt? He would not have despaired.
It's funny because the narrator, like, reflects on Sir Thomas a lot in this section, where it's like, if only mm-hmm. Sir Thomas would have known this, or if only he could have seen this, or if only he could have looked at that, he would have been like, I was right. mm-hmm. Basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He would have thought Mr. Crawford sure of her.
Exactly.
It's just, she is not happy. And, you know, I do sometimes wonder if she, like, what her expectations were going home. Because I know, like, we know that she went home to see William off and to, like, spend some time with him. And he was supposed to be there for a couple of days. But, like, she didn't really say much about being excited to see her family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think she was, like, hoping to, like, reconnect with at least her mom and, like, her other family members, but she didn't know what to expect of them. And so when she gets there, she's learning that they don't really notice her. And to be fair, they've been without her for like 10 years. And there's like so much other crap going on that it's no mm-hmm. wonder that they don't really notice her. Also, she's like an adult woman and they're like, she's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's so much going on. There are 10 kids. There's nine kids, because one died.
Yes. So
it's insane.
Yeah.
And they're mostly boys. There are 6 boys and 3 girls.
Yeah. And it talks about, like, her mother's affection. So when we get to the section about Fanny's mother, it's like, all her mom really cares about are her sons. Like, mm-hmm. she's indulgent to the youngest girl, the little 5-year-old that's, like, her baby. William's, like, her pride and joy. And then her other mm-hmm. sons, like, take up the rest of her, like, attention. So there's the two that are off. That's John and Richard. They're off working mm-hmm. already. Sam is, like, getting ready to go out somewhere, shipping off somewhere, doing, I don't know. Fanny's helping Sam get ready, and she's like realizing, oh, Sam has some potential here, even though he's like loud and crazy. He has some potential, but then he leaves. Yeah. And then it's just mm-hmm. the two youngest boys who are still at school, but they're just kind of wild because they're still young boys. And then there's mm-hmm. a little girl, and then
yeah, I think one of them is like four or five.
No, they're 8 and 9.
Like 6. Yeah. Oh, okay.
They're 8 and 9.
One was like, Fanny didn't know him before she left.
Yeah. And the youngest is that little girl, Betsy.
Yeah. So Mary is the smallest. No, Mary Betsy. Died.
Yeah.
Betsy.
Betsy's the littlest.
Yeah, so Betsy's the littlest, but what I think I was trying to say was, I think that, like, Fanny didn't really know her before she left for Mansfield.
Yeah.
So, I was just trying to remember which one was the one that was, like, trigger for Fanny going to Mansfield.
I think she came after Fanny was gone. I think maybe one of the youngest boy might have been the... Maybe, if I remember right, or I don't know. Who knows? But regardless, there's a whole mess of children, and that's why her parents don't care that she's there. And then her dad is like, her dad gets a pretty harsh, like, paragraph to him. This, like, I don't know how he is, but, like, he's a drunk, he smells, he uses bad language, he doesn't talk to Fanny except when he's, like, making fun of her. He's gone all the time. When he is home, he's, like, doing nothing. She's just, like, really ashamed of him.
Yeah. And, I mean, like, do we know what his job is?
It has to be something with the docks. It has to be. But, yeah, so, we don't know.
Like, he goes to the pub on Saturdays and gets drunk because they're not open or serving alcohol on Sundays. And, like, he comes home, and we already saw that he just sits down, he reads the paper that he borrows from his neighbor by candlelight, and he has 8 children at home-ish. So he has 5 children at home.
Yeah.
I don't blame the guy, because it's also that they're not really, like, being too strict with the kids either, and no. Kind of giving them the sense of, etiquette, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
That, like, Fanny would have had, or that Fanny had growing up in Mansfield Park.
Exactly.
So, like, they're not learning the skills that they should have and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah.
And they're not, like, high society, so, like, those skills wouldn't, like, help them either. Like, there's, I don't know, it's just, they're just very different worlds, right? There's, like, refined country estate manners, and then there's crass, like, port side people. Like, they're just very different worlds. And Fanny spending most of her, like, formidable years at Mansfield Park in that society, this is a huge, like, essentially culture shock to her, even though this is her own family. And I feel like, yes, it is a narrator giving us this, but I feel like it's influenced by Fanny's voice as well. So I feel like the criticisms and, like, the reflection on Fanny's family are harsher just because, like, Fanny isn't used to it. And it's, like, so different from Mansfield Park. And I think kind of that's where it comes from. I think it's supposed to, like, show us, like, that juxtaposition. I don't think her dad's, like, an evil man. He isn't dastardly. No. He isn't, like, trying to, like, harm her or the family. He's just, like, kind of a man who has so many children he can't do anything about it. And he's just going to, like, live his life the only way he knows how, which is this way. Kind of like how her uncle isn't, like, a terrible, evil, horrible person, but, like, he does these things that are, like, based on what he thinks is right. I don't know.
Well, so one of the things that we see in All of Austin is that the heroine's parents all have flaws.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously we have Mrs. Bennett is, you know, Mrs. Bennett.
Yeah, she's obsessed with getting her daughters married, and she's very silly. Yeah.
And she's also, yeah, silly, a little uncouth when it comes to that in certain ways. Mm-hmm. Mr. Bennett is very, like, hands-off, stuff like that. Those are very much flaws. Mr. Woodhouse is a little...
He's a hypochondriac.
Yeah. The only people who... the only parents who aren't seen as having flaws are Catherine Moreland's parents. And that's because they're barely in the book. And they're kind of lifted up as these, like, high, well-off parents. But the people she stays with, the Allens, they are flawed.
Yeah, for sure. Although, I will say that Catherine Morland's parents, though we don't know much about them and they're not like that flawed, they are also in their own way, like, they didn't give Catherine a lot of practical advice or knowledge. Like, there are those little parts about her mother and, like, oh, if only her mother knew to, like, tell her X, Y, and Z, blah, 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 you know?
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah, but they're not, like flawed like any of the other ones that we've seen.
Yeah, and I wonder sometimes if that wasn't kind of, like, because of their status.
Yeah.
A little bit. But either way, so, this whole section is talking about the flaws of the Price parents.
Yeah.
So, like, the flaws of her father are that he is kind of not paying attention. Kind of like Mr. Bennett. He's very hands-off.
Yeah.
He focuses on what he wants to talk about, which is the ships, the Navy, the pubs. That's what he wants to talk about.
And he talks to men.
Very much like Mr. Bennett.
And he talks to men.
And he talks to the boys.
He does not know how to talk to women.
No. And again, it's very much like Mr. Bennett, who wants to talk about what he wants to talk about. The difference is that he doesn't have an option to only talk to his sons, because he doesn't have any.
Exactly.
And then we have Mrs. Price, who, her flaws are that she doesn't have the nature or the like natural ability to kind of take over her house and be the head of, or the head of household, in the sense that she has to run the house. She has to run the servants. She needs to make sure that her kids are learning how to read and, you know, doing what they're supposed to do and things like that. Like, she's not teaching them anything. She's not giving them the life skills that they are going to need, or even the societal skills that they will need. Because there are certain things that the sisters and brothers are doing that, even though they're not high society, still don't look very good.
Yeah.
Like, one of the sisters is literally spying on the housemaids.
Yeah.
So, like, that won't fly.
No.
Like, that's not good. So, so that's Mrs. Price's flaws. And it's interesting because these chapters tend to compare Mrs. Price with her sisters.
Yes.
And it's like, she has more of, like, she looks like Mrs. Bertram.
And she has her demeanor as well, in terms of, like,
she has her demeanor,
hands-offishness and, like, the,
uh-huh.
I'm not interested in doing these kinds of things.
Yeah. But she needs to have Mrs. Norris's demeanor.
Yeah.
And this is, like, the only section of this entire book where we actually kind of get some praise of Mrs. Norris.
Yeah, Fanny's like, I guess Mrs. Norris wasn't that bad.
So it says in my annotated version, this praise of Mrs. Norris, as limited as it is, demonstrates Jane Austen's realism and fairness regarding her characters. Mrs. Norris is perhaps one of the most odious of all of her characters, one of the nastiest characters, or whose nastiness is always on display. But the author still is willing to admit that Mrs. Norris has particular qualities that, within a certain context, can prove useful.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because Mrs. Norris, in her position, doesn't necessarily need to have the personality or whatever that she has. Like, she, well, yes, she does have to kind of run a household. She has enough, like, status and wealth to where she could probably just hire a maid that would, you know, do it, kind of like at Mansfield Park. But Mrs. Price, who needs Mrs. Norris's, like, personality to run her house because she doesn't have the ability to do that, doesn't have it.
Could you imagine if Mrs. Norris had went there? She would have had that whole house turned around in, like, less than a week, probably.
If she would be willing to stay that long.
Yeah. I think she would. I think she would see how awful it is and she'd be like, well, I have to do this. Like, she has such a sense of duty about her. And, like, it's not like she does it for any of the right reasons. She does it so that she has something, like, she can say about herself and how great she is and what she did for XYZ, you know?
Yeah. That would have been interesting.
That would have been interesting.
But it's definitely an interesting comparison to see Fanny comparing her mom to Mrs. Bertram and then seeing the different circumstances that they have in terms of, like, running their house and running their children, in a sense.
Yeah.
Because Mrs. Bertram can be hands-off because she has the staff that can run the house.
Mm-hmm.
But Mrs. Price doesn't, and therefore the house is not run.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
So then the next part, which also kind of, it doesn't necessarily go into the evils of like the house itself anymore, but it does talk about her relationship with Susan and how Fanny interprets Susan. But before we get there, that chapter does start with the explanation of a letter that Fanny received from Mary Crawford. And it's one that basically is like, Fanny got this letter. And yes, it contained all of this information, but really it's just to show that like Fanny is grateful for any kind of correspondence, even from Mary Crawford, who we know Fanny has been like kind of cool towards like in at certain times. But she gets this letter from her and she's like, oh, thank God, somebody, I don't care who, but somebody from my old life is writing to me. and I just think it's really interesting. And so in that letter, you know, we learn that Henry's been at Everingham. He's like getting his like house or whatever set up there. She goes and she sees Julia and Mrs. Rushworth finally, but she doesn't say too much about them, other than that she hints that she had mentioned Fanny and mentioned her brother. She doesn't outright say it, but she's like, but I won't tease her anymore by mentioning you too much. So you get the sense that they know, or they have an idea that there's an attachment there between Fanny mm-hmm. and Henry Crawford, which I think is very juicy.
I personally would have loved to have seen Mariah's face.
Yeah. And then she also goes to talk about Mrs. Rushworth's house in London and like how great mm-hmm. it is and like how it used to be owned by these people and now she has. And she's like, you know, at least she has that to go off of, because Henry for sure couldn't have gotten her something as grand as that. And her line specifically is that she got her penny worth for her penny.
Yep.
And she talks about how Julia is like, I don't know, talking to this baron, but like she doesn't see it's like
no super. You know who the baron is, right?
No.
It's Yates.
Oh.
Mary Crawford calls him by the baron's name in the play.
That's why it sounded familiar. Okay, thank you for clearing that up for me, because yep. I really wasn't sure. Okay, so Yates.
Yep, no.
Yates is there. Interesting.
Yeah, she calls him Baron Wildham or
Wildenham, yeah.
Yeah, which is the name of the character that he was playing in the play, which is why she was talking about like these speeches and stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay.
Or the rants, yeah.
Interesting. But she's like not, she can't decide like if there's an attachment there or not. And I feel mm-hmm. like she's like she could do better than him, but I don't know, who knows. This is all from Mary Crawford's point of view, so we don't really know for sure. And yeah, that's essentially that first letter. It's not like letter in letter form, guys, but we get like all the juicy details out of it.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the chapter focuses on Susan, and what Fanny can do to help her. And like, she's looking at Susan, who is her 14-year-old sister. And that's the one who was fighting with the little one over the knife that was left by the sister who passed away. And Fanny's like, she sees things in Susan that are promising. Because at first she wasn't sure. But she's like, it's very obvious to me that Susan is trying to make order out of chaos. But she's a 14-year-old girl in a family of however many crazies. And she can't do it. She can't do it alone. And all she has to go off of are what she was raised with, which is the people who have raised her are the same people she's trying to control. And she can't do it because she doesn't have the skills, because they didn't give her those skills, except for like the loudness and the crassness, which is like kind mm-hmm. of how she responds to it. And so Fanny like takes it upon herself to be like, let me see if I can like give her some advice. Let me see if I can correct this a little bit. Let me see what I can do for her. And the first thing she does to like fix at least one issue in the household is she takes the money that her uncle gives her and she purchases a small silver knife for the baby sister so that mm-hmm. Susan can finally just have the one that Mary left behind.
Because it's a good idea to give small children knives.
Yes. I'm like, okay, is there a note about this silver knife at all in your annotated version? I was like trying to like, what is it? How big is it? What was it? Is it like a letter opener? Like, is it for like smearing bread on butter or butter on bread? Like, what is this knife for? Why would a girl have it? Is it for sewing? Mm-mm. Is it like something for sewing? Nothing? There's nothing. Out of annotated version. Like, you're really dropping the ball on us here? Because this knife seems like a throwaway detail, but it is like everywhere in these chapters.
I mean, it might be in the previous section when we are first told about it.
I'm just going to go ahead and Google it. What's the deal with the silver knife in Mansfield Park?
Oh, so remember how I said, William is a lieutenant. Yes. And you're like, he's a lieutenant.
Yeah.
In England, they're called lieutenants.
Oh, okay.
Lieutenant and lieutenant are the same thing. It's just you don't say lieutenant.
Got it.
In England, you say lieutenant.
Is it spelled the same?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. So apparently a knife is a sign of civilization and manners. Let's see. It would have been used to like peel fruits. It would have been expensive as it's silver. And so, you know, you think of the Price family and they don't have a lot. And like they probably have sunk down even a bit more in terms of status with like all their kids and they can't afford things. So like having this silver knife, which is kind of considered a luxurious item, might be why it's so important and so sought after.
A knife is a basic accessory for household tasks, which girls and women in a family like this, one that could not rely on servants for most of those tasks, would use frequently and strongly value. Knife did not have an aggressive connotation at the time. The blade was used, or the blade used as a weapon was called a dagger.
Yeah, so they could have used it for like eating, any of the things that I mentioned before, even yep. like sewing tasks yep. or whatever. So,
yep.
So anyway, Fanny gets one for Betsy.
Yeah, who is still a very small child.
Yeah. But at the same time, they got to learn how to use those skills at some point. And so, I don't know. There you go. It's a very different time. But anyway, so get the knife. Everybody's happy. And Fanny's like, cool. I solved a problem on my own. And now let me go ahead and spend some more time with Susan. And maybe, you know, she likes to read, but she doesn't read a lot. She doesn't have access to that. Let me go ahead and start getting books from the library. And, like, maybe I can get her interested in certain things and, like, teach her certain things, which is essentially what she does.
So then it's been a bit since she's been gone from Mansfield Park.
4 weeks.
And she knows that it's been at least a week since Edmund was supposed to go to London. Which she knows that he's going to go and he's going to propose to Mary Crawford. Like, that's the plan. That's what she sees as the plan.
Yes.
But he hasn't heard yet. And it's driving her crazy because Mary Crawford didn't say anything because probably he wasn't there yet. And now he's supposed to be there and she hasn't heard from him. And it's making her anxious.
Every time the post comes, she gets nervous.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She like hides from the postman. She's very scared. And then Henry Crawford shows up.
There's a knock out of nowhere on her door. And she's like, what? Who is here? And then there's a gentleman's voice. And she's like, I know that voice. And she can't get away. Imagine, like, okay, so you got Henry Crawford, who, like, is a gentleman, who is important, who has money. Not a lot, not as much as, like, Rushworth or whatever, but he has enough. Like, he's, you know, well off. All these fine...
He has an estate he has to go run.
Yeah, all these fine manners. And then Fanny and her family in the little house full of chaos, in he comes. And she's just like, oh, no. But it's not that bad because her brother, most of her brothers are out for the day. It's just her mom at home. Her mom is like super nice because she introduces him as a friend of William's. And so she's mm-hmm. like, oh, William. Oh, well, okay. And so like, it's all of her best foot forward, essentially. And then Henry's like, it's really nice out. We should go for a walk. And nobody's like getting it.
Probably because the house is small and probably in pure chaos.
It's more that Henry Crawford wants to like wrangle some alone time with Fanny.
I mean, yeah, but also.
So Mrs. Price is like, well, I don't usually go on walks. I'm very busy, even though she's not. I mean, she is, no. But she's not. Because it does talk about like something, one of my favorite parts in the section before where it talks about like Fanny's mom and it's like she rushed about but had like nothing to do. She was constantly busy but not employed in things, right? So like it's mm-hmm. so it's very much that vibe. But he does eventually take Fanny and Susan out. He's like, well, it's so nice. Let me like take your daughters out. And she's like, okay, strange person who I don't know. Take my
but he's a friend daughter. Of William.
But he's a friend of no, I know, but like still, it's like she's never met him before. She's only going off of Fanny's words. Like a mother who is more with it would have been like more suspicious. But she is not. So Fanny and Susan and Henry Crawford go for a walk, and Fanny's like, how the fuck did I get here? What is happening? And then they run into Fanny's dad. And Fanny's like...
Who is drunk.
Well, he's not that drunk. It does say that he put his, like, best foot forward when he, like, came up with, like, a gentleman like that. So, like, she... But before this happens, before she realized that everything is fine, like, between Henry Crawford and her dad, she's like... Yeah, I don't want Henry Crawford to like me, but I don't want this to be the reason why he doesn't like me.
Yeah.
So, but it like goes really well. Like Fanny's dad is really great to talk to. And again, it's because he can talk to dudes and he knows how to mm-hmm. talk to guys. And so like, and like, yeah, they're, he's not like dressed nice, but he isn't swearing at least.
And, no, like, no.
You know.
Well, and I shouldn't say that he's definitely drunk, but he definitely came from the pub.
Yeah.
And because you couldn't get alcohol on Sundays at the time, lots of people got super drunk on Saturdays at the pub.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's just kind of implied that he's been drinking heavily. So we know that the Prices are together because they fell in love.
Yes.
But Mr. Price can't talk to women.
Right. Right now.
Just throwing that out
he
there.
Might have been a very different man when he was younger. Who knows? Time and a mess of children and no fortune has not been kind to him.
No.
But anyway, so they Mr. Price ends up joining them on their walks and they go down to the docks and, you know, doing stuff. And like he ends up talking to this guy that he works with, Mr. Price does, and he's leaving Henry and Fanny and Susan, you know, kind of to rest a bit. And Harry Crawford, it's very obvious, wants to like beg Fanny to marry him some more, but he can't because Susan's right there.
He definitely does start talking about certain things though. So like he talks about how despite the fact that it is like high time or like high season in London, he's not in London. He went to his estate and he's going there to make sure that the tenants are well taken care of, you know, that his estate manager isn't ripping them off, you know, and he's doing all these things and he's bragging about, oh yeah, no, I did this great thing. I did that great thing. But like given the time of year, that isn't necessary, like, that's not what the people who have estates do that time of year, because it's a weird time of year, it's like spring.
Yeah.
So, like, he had no reason to go and do that, he literally did it, so then he should tell Fanny about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, we know he actually did it, because I think Mary Crawford mentions it. So, because otherwise I was just like, did he actually go and do that?
Yeah. So in her first letter, she talks about, like, Henry going to Everingham and, like, doing some stuff mm-hmm. there. And then, yeah, he talks about, like, oh, yeah, I came across these cottages and these people, and I didn't even know they were there. And, yeah, it was really great. And Fanny's like, look at him. He's, like, helping people who are less fortunate than he is. He's, like, trying to be, like, a good, like, head of an estate, essentially. Mm-hmm. Like, how changed he is. Fanny, you're being drawn in by him. He's schmoozing you. You're letting him schmooze you.
It's working.
It's working.
Especially when she then starts going back and seeing her house and thinking about, like, oh, well, you know, like, Susan should be taken away from here and sent to a different place, but I don't have a house. But Henry Crawford has a house. He has a nice house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think it's really interesting when he's talking about Everingham and all the things, you know, that's going on there. And she's, like, interested in it. And, like, he can't say anything improper because Susan's there and she'll report back. But he does say, like, you know, it'd be really great to have maybe a particular friend, wink, wink, Fanny, mm-hmm. help me out. Somebody more dearer than I have ever yet held before, like, wink, wink, Fanny. And she's like, nope. And then he's like, okay, I went too far. Let's talk about Mansfield Park now. And mm-hmm. so they do a little bit. And she asks about Edmund and, like, what it was like for him to be in London, because she can't, like, not ask about that, because it will look weird and suspicious if she keeps, like, shying away from any type of conversation that has to do with Edmund and Mary and London. So she steals herself against that, and she does that. But there's nothing really to report. Like, it's very, what's going on with Edmund and Mary is very mysterious.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mr. Price invites Henry Crawford over for dinner, and Fanny's like, no. And he's like, oh, I can't. And she's like, thank God. But he is going to spend the next day with them. So,
yeah, they go to church.
They go to church together. They spend the whole Sunday together. Church with the Prices. Which apparently doesn't sound that bad, because Fanny's like, Sunday's like her favorite day because they're all clean and wearing their nice clothes and not drunk.
Well, and this is also when Henry starts to talk to Fanny about, like, the way she looks and how it's very clear that she is not happy and how she needs to go back to Mansfield Park.
Yeah.
And he's like, how long is your trip supposed to be? And she's like, oh, 2 months. And he's like, you need to cut that short, like, 6 weeks maybe instead of 8. Just like, whenever you're ready to go, let me know, and I'll be here with Mary, and we'll take you back.
He's like,
you shouldn't be here.
Well, even before that, he's like, how are you getting home? And she's like, oh, I don't know yet. And he's like,
yeah.
He's like kind of, I feel like he was kind of suspicious that the Bertrams were just going to leave her there. They'd just be like,
I mean, yeah, bye, Fanny. Probably. Yeah. Like, oh, you won't marry this guy? You're going to stay there until you decide to. Which, I mean, I wouldn't put it past Sir Thomas. Yeah. Let me just say that.
Although, if he could have seen her, Elle. If he could have seen Fanny,
he would have
just brought her home right then. He knows.
Yeah.
So they spend that Sunday together. He's, you know, offering to take her home. He walks her back to her place, to the Price's house, and, like, okay, well, see you, Fanny. Like, maybe I'll hear from you soon. Like, can I give a message to anybody? And she's like, yeah, just your sister. And then, oh, if you see Edmund, you know. And he's like, oh, yes, I'll make Edmund write to you. And whatever. And then he goes. And then she's kind of sad that he's gone.
Yeah.
I don't think
probably because that's the last connection she has with her previous life.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think she's, like, sad specifically that it's Henry Crawford. I think she's just sad that, like, someone who reminds her of her actual home, which is now Mansfield Park, has gone away. And so that representation that she had, that connection she had, is now gone again. And it's kind of like her being dropped off at her family's house on her own all over again, you know? It's kind of bringing up those feelings.
It doesn't help that she also doesn't know when she's going to hear from anybody again, because the only person that's been consistently writing her has been Mary Crawford.
Yeah.
And like,
and her she's aunt.
Terrified of that news.
Yeah. Well, and her aunt Bertram is also consistently writing to her, but it's not like the quality of Mary's letters. It's yeah. like, you know, just simple yeah. things. So, yeah. So she's bummed out, but she pours herself into like helping Susan some more. And then she gets a letter from Mary Crawford, and this is like a full letter in letter form, and we get some interesting tidbits in here, which I know we talked about at the beginning, but we didn't talk about Fanny's reaction. So this is a letter that basically informs Fanny about Mrs. Rushworth's ball. It's the one that, even though like there's no details about the ball because, you know, Mary didn't write it then. It was too many days ago. Sorry, I should have, but I didn't. And I'm gonna go see my other friend now. She's leaving the Frasers. She's gonna go stay with the other friend, the sister. And she like talks about Edmund. And she's like, "There's really nothing to say," which sucks. And she's just like in the bulk of the letter, she isn't really saying too much, other than like, you know, Henry told me he went to see you. I know Henry went to see you. Like, he didn't go down to Portsmouth to do whatever. He went to see you, which Henry does tell her that. He's mm-hmm. like, "I came here mm-hmm. specifically to see you." And then Mary Crawford gives her this huge postscript. And the postscript really is where all the juicy details are, because she's like, "Oh, I need to tell you this because, sorry, I started thinking about Edmund and I forgot." So like, okay, Mary, we get it. Like, we get it. But she's like, "My brother said, if you want to come home, we'll bring you home. And I think it's a great idea. And I think we should come home. And oh, let me also tell you that I'm going to be calling Mrs. Rushworth when Henry comes back. He's going into Norfolk for some time, and then he's going to come back, and he will see the Rushworths." Which I own I am not sorry for, having a little curiosity, and so I think has he, though he will not acknowledge it. So basically she's like, "We're going to the Rushworths. I'm bringing Henry because I know he wants to know, even though he won't say that he wants to know, but he wants to know what it's like. And he wants to see, potentially, if he's still tempted by Mariah."
Mm-hmm.
And that's like what Fanny reads between those lines. And she is not mm-hmm. happy about this. She's like hoping he's changed enough that he'll be okay. But she's like, Mary should know better than to like
yeah.
parade him in front of Mariah.
Mary's not the best of friends.
She really isn't. And she also doesn't like the way she talks about Edmund, because all she can talk about in terms of loving Edmund is like his looks. She's like, just his looks. Like, not like his, not just like how he looks, but like, I mean, even though that is mentioned, like he's tall, mm-hmm. he's this, he's that, but like his looks in terms of his like manners as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she talks about how Mrs. Frasier commented on him, and she's like, "She's barely known Edmund half a year, and she's letting this other woman who doesn't even know him, like, advise her on whatever." Like, what? This is crazy.
Now, we do have to remember that Fanny is biased when it comes to Mary and Edmund, because she is in love with Edmund.
Yes.
But we, on the other hand, can judge.
But she was really gentle with Henry Crawford in this. She was like, she's very concerned for him coming across mm-hmm. Mariah.
Mm-hmm.
She is. And I feel like it's because her heart has softened toward him since him coming to visit mm-hmm. her, and like the attentions that he gave to her. And this is...
And the fact that he didn't run away when he saw her family.
Exactly, yeah. She's like, wow, he's made of a lot tougher stuff than I thought, essentially. And this is where she's like, man, if only I could get Susan out of here. Susan could have, like, a really bright future. And she's like, if only I had a house. Henry Crawford has a house. And, like, it's basically ending on this point where she's like, could I marry Henry Crawford for his house? Not unlike Mariah marry Mr. Rushworth.
Yeah. Though towards the end, Mariah marrying Mr. Rushworth was definitely more out of spite it was.
For sure.
Because initially she did get engaged to him because it was a good match in terms of money and status. Mm-hmm. So yeah. But at the end, it was spite.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah. So that's this section.
That's it. That's the epistolary portion of this.
So, do you think Henry Crawford has really changed, or is this all an act?
I think that Henry Crawford thinks that he has changed, mm-hmm. but he will easily fall back into his old habits. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it's so much an act. I think it started as an act, but since then, I feel like it isn't as much of an act. And this is coming from the person who was like, I don't trust him. I don't trust him. And, you know, like everything like that. But I think that coming to Portsmouth definitely leaned more on the he believes that he has changed and that this is what he wants. But it's not actually what he wants because he hasn't.
Do you think, and then just to take this a step further, and you don't have to answer this today. You can answer this next week. Do you think that that Henry Crawford could be more enticed to change if he has Fanny's affection? Like, if he knows he has it. Because he's very uncertain. He's very unstable right now. And do you think it's like his unstableness is more from like, he isn't sure about Fanny's affection or if he can even get Fanny? Or do you think it's like he's just taking on too much?
I think that if Fanny were to marry Henry, he would feel content for a while and then slip back into old habits.
Yeah.
Yeah. He would have a mistress probably within the first 5 years. And that would be that. It wouldn't be what Fanny wants.
Okay.
Even if Fanny at the time, like, even if Fanny decides, nope, I'm going to fall in love with Henry Crawford. Even if she marries him, deciding that she's in love with him, that she has feelings for him. It still won't be what she wants overall because he will slip back into old habits later.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the thing. It's less that I don't trust Henry Crawford and more that I don't trust his, like, commitment to staying the way he is. And whether that is a conscious decision or just falling back into old habits and not having that the willpower to kind of, you know, say no to temptations and whatnot. I just don't think that it is a permanent change for him.
I have another follow-up question, but I'm saving it for next week specifically. Okay. But it is along those same themes of like, yes. Henry Crawford and Fanny and the affection she shows toward him. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, let me just say this. Even though it seems like Henry Crawford is changing a bit in this book, whether, you know, it's a permanent change or not, he is still a trash human.
Yeah. He's not a good dude because his motivation is not right. It's kind of like, okay, so I'm rewatching The Good Place, which is like such a great show. And like, I went through the first season and it's like that, like Eleanor can't get the points that she needs to stay in the good place because all the good deeds she's doing are motivated by her staying in the good place. They're not like true intentions, which is very similar to Henry Crawford. Like, I feel like he can't succeed with Fanny because his motivations are specifically to succeed with Fanny and not to actually be the good person that Fanny is looking for.
Right, right. And that's why it won't work.
And that's why it won't work.
It wouldn't do, like, even if he got those good, you know, those good graces and that affection, it wouldn't work out overall because eventually he would stop doing it to get Fanny's affection because he already has
it. He has it. So, like, there's, yeah, what else is there to do?
He wouldn't be continuing to do those things to keep her affection.
Exactly.
Eventually.
Yeah. It's all eventually motivated get to get it, not to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Okay, good. This is laying some good crumbs for next week, guys. So we're just going to pause there before we give everything away.
Well, I just want to say, like, we have one section left of this book.
Yep, 5 more chapters.
And, like, the end pairing still has to happen.
Yeah.
I feel like this is going to be another Emma Knightley situation where it's just like, out of the blue, here you go, they're married. But the difference is that we know Fanny likes Edmund.
Yeah.
But we don't know that Edmund likes Fanny.
Yeah. And see, I don't really remember how fast it goes in the book. And, like, the motivations that create the change are very different here in the book than they are in the movie. So, and I'm not seeing the parallels. So, yeah, I don't know. 5 chapters, it's gonna go by in a whirlwind. We got basically the climax and all of the falling action and resolution happening in these next 5 chapters, guys. It's gonna be a whirlwind.
Or it's gonna be extremely boring. Either way, it will be. So, that's it for this week.
Yep.
We will catch you guys next week where we finish the book.
Yes, we will be reading chapters 44 through 48.
Bye.
Bye. Beyond Measure is hosted by me, Katrina Mayer,
and me, Elle Kammerer. We're part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts you'll love at frolic.media/podcasts.
Our music was composed by Shane Ivers, and our artwork was created by the beautiful and talented Katie Keneally.
You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts, or you can find us on our website at withbeyondmeasure.com. Or follow us on Instagram for all of our updates, memes, and just fun stuff. Our handle is at WBMPodcast. I'm going to say that again. It's WBMPodcast.